Hi, this is Tom Bergeron. You know what you're doing. You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Yeah, no, I like fun. I'm having lunch tomorrow with a friend who has just received his own Funko Pop, so I'll find out what I got to do.
You probably just have to read him your resume.
Yeah, that's probably it.
I'm due my Funko Pop.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so we'll do the little promo things at the end.
Sure.
And we'll get this going. And like I said, we've got a few things. We're going to obviously – so just to preface, even though I don't sound like it, I used to be able to pack the car. I was born in Stoughton. So,
no kidding.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I've heard some recordings that my late dad did – of me and my sister when we were kids, and I had a Boston accent, and I don't know where it went. Same as you, Mike, I guess.
Yeah, well, by 93, when I was 13, I ended up in Kentucky for almost 25 years, and
that'll do it.
Yeah,
that'll do it. Yeah,
yeah. They beat the you guys out of me and put the y'all in me. I'm on y'all.
Hi, this is Tom Bergeron. You are listening to Altered Geek. You didn't think I knew that.
We are filled with personality around here. So.
Wonderful.
Oh, yes.
I'm filled with something, I've been told, but we won't bring that up right now.
To an Altered Geek and Geekcast Radio crossover interview. I am one of your hosts, not the normal host in Altered Geek. That's my buddy Steve Megatron joining me as always. Hello, sir.
Hello.
I'm, of course, TF Joe and Mike. And ladies and gentlemen, it's been a while since we've gotten a lot of interviews over the last 13 years. And it's been a while since we've had somebody with this person's career, longevity, and amazement. So we here at the Geekcast Radio Network are very excited to talk with Emmy Award-winning comedian and host. He's been in front of 9 squares, dressed up as a taco, and danced all the way through the stars. He even had a role in Star Trek Enterprise. Even if you are just a regular TV fan and you're not a geek like us, you've known Tom Bergeron your entire life. He's the man who is hosting as fast as he can. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I can't wait to meet him. Oh, me? Oh. Oh, gosh, you sounded great, whoever that guy is.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, pleasure to be with you both. Now, this is a crossover episode. You don't usually co-host these together?
We do, but we don't. Usually when we do interviews, like specifically we would do voice actor interviews, and it would be on our cartoon show specifically because of animation or video games or whatever. But since Geekcast Radio, the overall network show, and Steve's show, Altered Geek, it's all geeked them all together. It's like, why not just – have it on both feeds and just rake in the numbers, even though we don't pay attention to the numbers.
Well, I think it's great. You know, numbers can I used to be a Nielsen junkie. You know, I'd look for the overnights and the demo breakdown and how we held versus last season or last week and all that. And that's how you get migraines. Yeah, it just have fun. You know, do the best you can. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, you move on to something else.
Yep. Absolutely. So, Mr. Bergeron, sir, what have you got going on currently? Are there any upcoming projects or projects you may have done recently in the last couple of strange years that you can talk about or that you're allowed to talk about? Because I know sometimes people aren't allowed to talk about things and then an interview might go viral because they accidentally talked about something.
Yeah, like if I was in a Marvel movie and just, you know, got verbal diarrhea and they took me out with a Kevin Feige sniper, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. No,
it's not that bad. I've got actually, I'm going off to the New Hampshire Film Festival. Next week, we're going to be screening a web series that I co-produced and did some acting in that we recorded just before the pandemic started. So it's been sort of on the shelf for a couple of years. So do that. And I'm also working on a film project with the world's oldest astronaut, William Shatner.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yes. The series he's talking about, folks, is Down the Middle.
I think you've done your homework. That's right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, like I don't know if you noticed in that long diatribe under the orange juice picture in the Skype chat, I said by now, as of this recording, I've listened to the book at least 8 times in the past 2 weeks.
I know. I did read that, and I considered an intervention.
No. Don't worry. We joke about that with Mike all the time.
Oh, yeah. Good.
I'm one of those anal retentive people that, because my brain works the way it does or doesn't, I have to have the information like immediately available. If I don't, I won't remember a damn thing.
No, I get it. Years ago, I did a daily talk show in Boston on television on the NBC affiliate at the time. And it was like cramming for an exam every night because we ran the gamut of topics, everything from the sublime to the serious to the ridiculous. And so every night I'd be getting ready for a 1-hour live show where, you know, I didn't want to look like I was caught with my notes down, if you will.
Yes, and it is so surreal to talk to you after all this time, because I've grown up with you. I'm 42. Mm-hmm. At this point, Steve's just a few years younger than I am.
Yep.
Like Hollywood Squares and all of that, and I'm pretty sure I had heard you on Morning Magic back when you were doing that. So
sure, back like, that would have been 93 into early 94.
Oh, maybe I didn't hear you on it then because I was in Kentucky by then.
Oh, well, crap. I don't know how strong the signal was.
No, it wasn't that. Sadly, we didn't have internet radio back then.
Not then.
All right. So we've kind of gotten into the radio thing, and you say in the book, and obviously it's true because you said it. Why would you say it unless it was true? Radio has always been your first love.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's you know, I never really thought of a television career. I was interested in doing stuff on stage, mm-hmm. and I was interested in radio, and lucked into a job while I was still in high school because I had a public speaking teacher who was a part-time newsman at the local radio station, and I did well enough in his class and well enough with my Machiavellian designs to brown nose my way into his class that he introduced me to the station manager. So I was actually working in radio when I was a senior in high school.
So besides your, which you say you have no memory of the first broadcast, but what were the overall memories of?
Well, it's interesting. I have a sense memory. It's I don't remember. I know it was a rock show, like a rock music show on a Saturday night. And I do have a sense memory of turning, of flicking the mic switch and turning the pot. If you know those old boards that had like a round pot for volume, you'd turn that up. And I just remember how hard my heart was beating. I was so nervous. And I made some inane joke or something like that, but I managed to get through it. And I was feeling pretty good about myself. And on Monday, when I was back in school, I was walking in the corridor and some guys were hanging out. And one of them yelled, "Hey, Bergeron, we heard your show Saturday." I went, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Yeah, you sucked." Yeah, well, OK, welcome to a preview of what social media might be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so different back then. It just really was. And it's just crazy.
Innocent compared to
compared to what social media is now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now you don't have to wait till the next day to hear it.
No. you can feel yourself being canceled imminently. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's hope not.
No.
Yeah. So following that up and again, focusing on radio, did you always want to be in radio? But most of all, like, what was your favorite part of being in radio?
I love the intimacy of it. One of the radio hosts that I listened to growing up was Gene Shepherd. I don't know if that name rings a bell with either of you, but he was out of New York. And he also, if you've seen the movie A Christmas Story, you know, yep. Yo, shoot your eye out. You know, yep. That's Gene Shepard narrates that. He plays Santa in it, and it's based on his stories. And the thing about Gene Shepard as a kid, he had this kind of a grainy quality to his voice, and it made everything sound potentially interesting. Not necessarily interesting, but potentially interesting. You know, so I was just absolutely captivated by what you could do one-on-one with a microphone to a listener. And interestingly, in television, whenever I've talked to people coming up in the business or students who want to be on TV and host, I tell them, much as I felt in radio, don't think about an audience. You're really talking to one person. So whether you're on radio or a podcast or looking into, you know, the glass eye of a camera lens, it's really one person on the other side. And I think that approach helps. For example, when I started in radio, I actually had an album cover on the other side of the microphone, and it had a very, I don't know who the band was or anything, but there was a very attractive woman on the cover, and I talked to her. So for the first few years of my career, I probably just sounded horny.
Okay, now here's the real question. Was she a redhead?
No, she was not. No. But I certainly have made up for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I am married to a redhead, too.
Oh, so are you?
I can relate. Yes.
How many years you've been married? If it go, is it months or years at this point?
Years. 13 years, but I've been with her for 18.
Okay. We just celebrated our 40th in May.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Now, in Hollywood, it's not uncommon for people to be married for 40 years, but it's a cumulative thing. You know, it's multiple partners, but
yeah.
for Lois and I, it was just the two of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Hollywood. It's like, oh, we're going to be married for 5 minutes. Yeah. Bye. Yeah.
It's a lot of showmances out here, you know?
Yeah. It's like swipe next.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm still waiting for somebody to beat 72 days, but whatever. All right, so your first love is radio, you transition to TV hosting, and you've said in the book, which we will talk more about the book in a bit, but and I just realized now that book is almost a decade, it's just over a decade old.
Oh, yeah, 2009.
I was like, wait a minute, didn't this just come out like last week?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It sounds like it, but I was listening and I saw the data on it. I'm like, oh, it's a little dated, but it's not much. And you know, I mean, it's still all very relevant.
It was interesting too, because I don't want to jump the gun on you, but the wonderful thing, the serendipity of that, of writing that book. I was writing it in 2008, and I was looking for an ending. You know, because it's really a book about meditation, really. And I use career anecdotes to kind of string you along and talk about the values of meditation. And I was thinking, well, I need to kind of find a way to wrap it up. And I found it by, you know, co-hosting one of the worst Emmy broadcasts in history. So it gave me a wonderful way to wrap the book up.
Yes. Our regularly scheduled lives.
Yes. We returned it. Yeah.
There is no regularly scheduled life anymore. There never has been. It's always those ebbs and flows of things and all that. And
very true. Very
yeah. True. So which are you most comfortable in? Like, which one is, like, radio's first love, but you got into television broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had to pick, which one are you the most at home?
Well, it's interesting, and I think that answer is going to be colored by what we've just been through the past few years. I now, even the idea of going to a radio studio seems less interesting than just staying in my house and doing exactly what I'm doing right now.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's just television, there's more artifice with television. You have to dress up. You got someone slapping makeup on you. You've got, you know, a whole bunch of dealing with that in most radio formats you don't have to deal with. And you can show up unshaven in jeans or whatever, and now being able to do things out of my house like this and other things I've done over the past couple of years, I've gotten spoiled. I love it. I love just, you know, walking into my home office and firing up the computer and on we go.
That's the best way to have it done. We've been doing this for 13 years now on the network. He's been doing it for 16 years. I've been doing it for 14 years. And there was only one time he and I got together in person to do a recording. Yep. He was coming up for my then wedding at the time. That's a whole other story that doesn't need to be retold now, but
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So we met in person and we recorded actually one episode live together, which was hilarious because we were incoherent
the entire time because we had never done live in person together before. And it's like, oh, do we look at the Audacity? Because we were using Audacity to record on my computer. And because it wasn't Skype and
it was borderline awkward just because we're like, yeah, okay, we've never done this in person. How does this work?
Yeah. And I didn't have a desk set up like a radio board or anything like that where he could sit on one side and I could sit on the other. So it's like the microphone is over this way and I have my head turned halfway back this way to look at him to make sure we're actually, you know, conversing with each other. And it's like, no, let's just go back to Skype and whatever else, Zencast, right, or Zoom, right, whatever, because it's much easier to just sit here in our own environments and just talk.
Absolutely. In December, for the third year, I'll be hosting a benefit for the Ed Asner Family Center, which helps families with family members who have autism. And we've done a reading of the screenplay of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, that's cool.
And last year, Jason Sudeikis from Ted Lasso and SNL played George Bailey. The year before, Pete Davidson played George Bailey. We've had Mark Hamill was with us last time, too. And we you know, I'm sitting here at my house looking at the screen. There are about 14 Zoom boxes from all over the country. A star-studded, I mean, more stars than even I'd seen on Hollywood Squares years ago. And it's just a wonderful thing. I just, you know, I get a little IPA, I sit down, I, you know, introduce everybody, they read screenplay, I do a couple interviews, we do some Q&A with the viewers, and call it a night. It's a wonderful way to, quote, work.
Who did Mark play?
I forget who he played.
I would think
play Potter.
No, he didn't play Potter.
Oh, okay.
He didn't play Potter. I don't think he did. Of course, he's such a wonderful voice actor, too.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
You know, I would love to have, I didn't think of it at the time, but to have him use his Joker voice in It's a Wonderful Life as Potter would be inspired. If he's back this year, I might suggest that.
That would be awesome. Very cool.
No, it was just getting me thinking because you're like, oh, I have him do his Joker voice. I'm like, oh, I can do a Joker voice.
He can. He does.
Let's hear it.
Well, howdy there, Batman. Today is the day the clown cried. And he cried not for the passing of one man, but for the death of a dream.
Yeah, so yeah, I did that for my monologue.
Needs to be institutionalized, yeah.
I did that as my monologue in my acting class. And doing that, because like, I'm an introvert by nature, but I can put on the extrovert in public. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there staring at the classmates and they're all giving me this like jaw dropping look as I'm pulling on Mark Hamill, and my teacher's like, okay, that was good. Let's keep going.
That's funny. Well, you know, it's not uncommon for performers to be introverts. You know, I'm much more comfortable on I've often said I'm more comfortable on a live show in front of 20 million people than at a neighborhood party. You know, it's just my wiring's crossed, I guess. But it's worked so far, so I'm not going to complain.
Makes sense. One of the other parts I loved about the book was you discussing your meeting the Three Stooges.
Oh, yeah.
How cool was that for you to get to meet them in person?
Well, I met them over the phone. I never met them in person, but I called information in California. I was in Massachusetts in my childhood home, And my folks were out, and my sister was at a sleepover, and I had no life. So I thought, I'll see if I can track down Mo and Larry. And by the way, I was stone cold sober when I decided to do this at 16. Mm-hmm. And called information, got the number for a Larry Fine that turned out not to be the Larry Fine of the Three Stooges. But because they received calls like this occasionally, the woman who answered the phone knew where the Larry Fine was at the motion picture television home, which is not too far from where I live now in California. And I do work for them now. I do fundraising and such for them. But Larry came to the phone, and we talked for a bit, and I had my little cassette tape recorder going. And about 10 minutes into the conversation, he said, "You want Mo's number?" And he gave me Mo's home phone number. So I ended up talking to Mo that night, too. And it was just – and then subsequent to that night, over the next 18 months, I probably talked to each of them about half a dozen times, just sometimes to just call and say hi and check in.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that is very, very
we turned, awesome. As a matter of fact, we turned the tapes that I could find into a 90-minute special with Howard Stern on Sirius XM. It's called The Lost Stooges. I think you can still find it on the Sirius XM app.
And I'll have to check that out, because I am a huge – my mom was a huge Stooge fan. I'm a huge Stooge fan, and you're right. The curly years. No disrespect to Shemp, but the curly years.
Now, you know the chronology that Shemp was the original third Stooge, right?
Yeah.
And dropped out to do the Joe Palooka series, and then Jerry Howard, the younger brother, came mm-hmm. in, curly, and you know, he's the definitive third Stooge, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was them at their best.
Yeah, it really, really was.
It really was.
So you've done and you do certain times a lot of acting over the years, but mainly you're a television host. However, from voiceover to doing the plays that you've done and all that, like, what's your when you're acting, what is your favorite form of acting?
One of the things I just like against type. That's what intrigues me, because I think there's a perception both on the video show and dancing and Hollywood Squares and things like that, that one aspect of my personality is fairly dominant there. Pretty much who I am in life, really. Acting gives me the chance, to the degree that I do it, which is not that often, but mm-hmm. To play like I did a short film called The Messenger a couple of years ago, where I played a character who was the messenger of death. I got, you know, you mentioned Star Trek. I got to play an alien trader of exotic goods on an episode of Enterprise. I was a talk show host, which wasn't much of a stretch, on an episode of Castle before I was murdered. So if I can do something, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's an actor just recently, and he was asking a similar question. I said, I would like to sink my teeth into a real bad guy role that really just sort of surprise people.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of came close, sort of. You hosted the Love Muffin evil thing in Phineas and Ferb.
Oh, that's right.
You're that close.
Yeah, Phineas and Ferb, I did a voice role with them, but I also appeared on their talk show as me.
Yep.
That which was such fun. That was such fun I did that in New York against a green screen, and I would throw ideas out, and they were so the whole idea of meditating and levitating into the clouds and things mm-hmm. like that yep. was pretty much based on ad libs that they then went and brilliantly illustrated.
With such a busy lifestyle, how do you keep grounded?
I meditate.
Ferb loves meditating.
Really?
I do it every day.
Well, you know, I don't want to brag, Ferb, but when I get in the zone, I can levitate.
Will you teach us?
Happy to do it.
Let's go to the meditation room.
You have a meditation room? That's so cool.
Yeah. That was awesome.
So following that up and kind of focusing on the voice acting, what is your favorite type of voice acting work to do, whether it be some kind of narration or animation, as there's so many different types that you can do.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The best answer, I think, goes back to the first couple episodes of America's Funniest Home Videos that I did back in 2001. Bob, God bless him, the late Bob Saget, who became a good buddy, had done the first 8 years, you know, had really sort of planted the flag for that show.
Yep.
When he did it, and he would do character voices for the videos. And so when I first started, I can do voices too. But the moment I started
doing voices, I felt like it was really Bob's thing. You know, I was kind of, it felt very derivative.
So I pretty quickly came to what ultimately I did for the pretty much the whole 15 years I hosted the show, which was really just me, talking, you know, and spewing dad jokes.
And it's always the best.
Well, it worked for me. And Alfonso and I had lunch the other day, and he was saying, you know, he had to make that same decision, and he thought he'd feel more comfortable sort of doing it closer to the way I did it as well. And Bob and I, we would talk about it, and I did get him to come back for the 25th anniversary show, and he started doing the character voices. And just if you see that show, and I think it's on Hulu or Disney Plus or something, The Summit with Saget, it's called, and you just watch me basically break up for the hour. I mean, I told him before we started taping, I said, I'll get us to the clips. I'll get us to the commercials. You just do whatever you want to do. And he was hilarious. He just was. It was such fun. But character voices like he did quickly felt like they were the wrong direction for me to go in.
Yeah, that, and then obviously they did the little gag with you with putting your head on
Tom's Home Movies, which they did that for a number of seasons.
Yep.
Until I begged them to stop. It was like, I think this horse is dead. We should stop beating it. But it worked for, you know, for a long time. It was pretty funny. But I think it may have overstayed its welcome a little bit.
So let's dive into the zen of you surviving Hollywood. See, changed it just a little bit there for you. What was your process other than, you know, Babette threatening you to do the book or else he'd, you know, beat you to death?
Well, you know, when my agent at the time had taken a meeting with HarperCollins without telling me and they expressed interest in me doing a book, and I was not convinced myself. So I said, look, let me write maybe 30 pages or something. And I just want to see if it, you know, if it sounds like me, it reads like I talk, or it seems self-conscious and like I'm trying to write, you know. So I did 30 pages and I sent them to a dear friend and the best judge of writing I could think of, Carl Reiner, who created the Dick Van Dyke Show and who directed Steve Martin in his first three movies, I think. And I said to my agent, I said, if Carl doesn't like it, there's no book. I trust his instinct. And his response was, and then he gave the pages to his late wife Estelle too, and they wrote me back and said, All we want to say is more. I went, okay. All right. If Carl says go, I'll go. So that's how that happened.
That's awesome. I was live messaging Mike earlier while I was re-listening to it, and I was like, one of my favorite parts was the portion of the Tropicana juice jump.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, I'm listening to this guy talk, and I'm just like, nobody cares, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sometimes there's like instances in life where I'm like, oh, come on, this, you know, a meeting can be over, this, you know, this could be over. And for you to just, you know, just dive in there.
When I saw you jump into that orange juice, I knew the show was okay.
That misdiagnosis of Fox After Breakfast fortunes came from Jim Cocott, one of Breakfast Time's true treasures and one of the first casualties of the move to the network. He was referring to my decision on that morning's live broadcast to jump into a few hundred gallons of vitamin C encased in a 6-foot-tall Tropicana glass on Fifth Avenue. My co-host for the week, Robin Givens, and I were talking with a pediatrician about the importance of a healthy diet for children. The segment was a typical morning television journey into the obvious, and it was making my head hurt. I looked at the pediatrician. His lips seemed to be flapping in slow motion. Blah, blah, immune system, blah. I looked at the enormous glass of orange juice. What would you have done on breakfast time, I thought. I turned to our other guest, actor Gregory Harrison, who had joined us on the sidewalk. He could give me a 10-finger boost. I looked back at the pediatrician. Blah, blah, antioxidants, blah. Excuse me, I said, cutting him off. I have to be honest with you. I haven't heard a word you've been saying. I keep looking at that glass of orange juice, and I keep thinking, when am I ever going to get a chance like this again? As I turned to Gregory Harrison to ask for help, I began to unclip my microphone from my shirt. In my IFB, the molded plastic earpiece that enables me to hear cues from the control room, Kim Swan, the show's new executive producer, Peter Faman having been fired by this point, began to yell, "Don't you dare!" I yanked the IFB out of my ear. Placing my heel into Gregory's interlaced hands, I was lifted to the top of the glass and climbed in. Then, holding myself up for dramatic effect, I gave a 3-2-1 countdown and vanished into the juice. Displaced Tropicana gushed out of the glass and onto Fifth Avenue. I stayed under for a second, savoring the sting of the juice against my closed eyes, and then sprang back up from the bottom of the glass. I surfaced to the sounds of gasps, laughter, and applause from the guests and crew. I felt wonderful. Until after the show, that is.
Well, there was a lot of subtext to that too, if you recall in the book. That was a version of what is still my favorite experience in television, which was a cable show on FX called Breakfast Time.
Yep.
And the network wanted to take a version of that show to the network. And it turned out to be one of those be careful what you wish for scenarios, because the executive who greenlit us to come to the network, in the interim between us wrapping up the cable show and getting ready to launch the network version, he went off to Paramount. So we were left in somebody else's care, and they didn't particularly care for the project. So it turned into a pretty tense year. And I had had it by the point that I was talking to this pediatrician on Fifth Avenue, standing next to a 6 or 7 foot tall Tropicana orange juice glass. And I just thought, you know, if this was the Breakfast Time show on FX, I wouldn't just stand here talking about the importance of vitamin C for kids. I would jump in that orange juice. So that's exactly what I did. And we had a guest who was there, gave me 10 fingers up. I took off my microphone and everything. And in the book, you can actually see pictures of what happened. But yeah, I dove in and it was great.
I was just laughing as I was listening to that portion of it, imagining you doing that.
But it was really me flipping off the network.
I grabbed that aspect too. But it was still hilarious to listen to.
Well, I mean, you're gonna pull one of those earwigs out of your ear that's basically super glued in your ear with somebody screaming, "Now, Tom, don't you dare! Don't you dare do it!"
Right. Yeah.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna do it.
Right. Yeah. Don't tell me.
I've already.
Yeah, that's always been a bad thing. If somebody says you can't do it, then I'm gonna find a way to. This came to mind. This is not quite on that level, but on the dancing show, for some reason, one of my last seasons, they thought it would be a good idea to put pretend martini glasses around the tables that were right along the ballroom floor. And they were real, and they had, you know, like plastic colored juice in it or you know, liquor in it. It was all nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, we came back from a commercial and I'm holding the glass and I'm just tipping it upside down and going, all fake. And I just put it, just because it pissed me off.
Well, there are better things to do on television, like, you know, not telling you the air date of a certain show that, you know, you had two, you know, you had an X and an O that were really eccentric. Oh, man, that April Fool's show. Oh,
the April Fool's show. That was brilliant. They completely smoked me on that. None of the stars in the – and by the way, this, if you go to my website, the cleverly titled TomBergeron.com, that episode is there. The April Fool's episode is there. And I also think the You Fool episode with Gilbert, where he was the last one to be called on. But the April Fool, they came up with this cockamamie reason why we had to do Teacher Tuesdays for the month of April. And because it was April Fool's, which I didn't realize at the time. And the two contestants who were supposedly teachers were really actors. And very good actors. And none of the stars knew, including a Penn and Teller who make a career out of fooling people. And they were just brilliant. They completely fooled me to the point. And my wife we were primarily living on the East Coast at that point, and I would fly out to shoot Hollywood Square. So my wife and daughters were visiting that weekend. And Henry Winkler, who was one of the two executive producers, said to Lois, I want you to come in the booth, because he needed to tell her that it was all a put on. And at one point, because I was having fun, I thought, oh, my God, this is crazy. These people are belligerent. They're, you know, the guy's making the woman cry. But if I can get 22 and a half minutes of this, we can air it. You know, I don't want to bag it because it's great TV. So, you know, I was just making up, you know, ad libs like, you know, for this, I gave up the audition to Card Sharks or whatever. And at one point, Henry turned to Lois and said, he's not going to stop. And Lois, who was a producer when we met, she went, no, he knows it's good television. So finally, Henry had to come over the intercom and go, Tom, April Fool's. And my immediate reaction was complete admiration for the two actors who had completely fooled all of us.
Yeah, that was just amazing. That, and you had mentioned in the book that, you know, Penn and Teller came up to you and said that we've been fooling people for years, and even we didn't figure it out. Like, if you can fool Penn and Teller, then But then again, it is the Fonz. I mean, come on.
Right.
the ultimate trickster in television.
I'll tell you, the 2 years, I had a great run of 6 years on that show. The first four were with Whoopi and Moffat Lee producing. And then the last two were Henry and Michael Levitt. And they had a very, really lovely sort of embrace of not only the genre of game shows, but the history of game shows. So on one week, which was really just a day of taping, we would do all five in a day. Peter Marshall, who was the original host of Hollywood Squares, was our center square. And I asked him if he would be willing to swap, if he'd be willing to take the podium again. And hold on just a second. Hey, guys, I'm working here. And he did. We swapped, and he hosted, and I went to the center square. And it was just such a treat for me, having grown up watching him host Hollywood Squares, to see him in person hosting it.
Well, that, and plus, you got to be the center square. Like,
yeah, that wasn't that was okay.
No, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Like, yes, obviously, you grew up with him, watching him do it, but like also, you're now a part of the show, seeing the guy that you grew up watching the show. Like, that's you could have been in the upper left or the lower right. It didn't matter. You were.
Yeah, it really didn't. It really didn't. It was just to watch him host, and he didn't miss a trick. I would imagine he might have been a little concerned that he would forget how to do it, but he didn't. It was like he had been doing it yesterday.
Yeah, so before we switch gears, I am on your lovely website here, and I'm all the way down to the bottom. One more thing before you go. You roped Superman into a dance show?
Huh?
Tim and Sam Daly. Tim Daly was,
oh, yes. Oh,
Tim Daly was the voice of Superman in 1996. Yeah.
Well, that was a little web series that they were doing called The Daily Show.
Yep. I remember that.
And I was invited to be part of one episode. Whoopi had done one too. And so the premise was I was trying to get him to be on Dancing with the Stars. But I was like, I played it like I was some sort of strange dance mystic, you know. it was fun.
That's awesome. So before everything that's happened over the last couple of years, had you attended any of the fan conventions or conventions in general as a fan or as a guest kind of thing?
No, I hadn't. And I had lunch with it's really nice to have become friends with people I grew up watching or just admired, whether I grew up watching them or came to know and appreciate them in adulthood. But Jonathan Frakes and I were having lunch, and who's Riker on Star Trek, mm-hmm. The Next Generation. And he was saying, you know, hey, you did a couple episodes. You could go to conventions. I thought, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think you got to be a regular, right? No, you could do it. So I might, you never know. I might pop up with some 4x6s of me with my alien makeup on.
I'm sure the fans would be ecstatic.
Well, it would be fun. It'd just be fun to do it as sort of, you know, a lark, I think.
Absolutely.
Bill is, Shatner is always jetting off to do another one. And he just did The Masked Singer, by the way.
Did he really?
He did. I was just at his house last week for Monday Night Football. He never mentioned a word about it. And a few nights later, I see online that he had been unmasked. He was dressed in a night costume. And I texted him. I said, you son of a gun. I didn't know you were going to do it. I said, my taco outfit was pretty claustrophobic. How was yours? He texted back, the worst experience I've ever had.
Now, did he mean just the costume itself or overall?
Yeah, just the costume, okay. Just how claustrophobic it was. Yeah. No, the people, you know. But he also was surprised, as I was. I thought, if I'm in this costume, I can pre-record my singing. And, you know, who's going to be? And they said, oh, no, you got to sing live.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So that was an added, you know, you have no peripheral vision. I mean, certainly, and I did a Sinatra tune, which went well, an Elvis tune, which went less well. You try to shake your hips in a taco shell. Nobody can see it. It's impossible. And I think Bill did, Bill, he doesn't sing in the, he sort of sings like Rex Harrison. you know what I mean? He talks sings. Yep. Yeah. Like My Fair Lady, The Rain in Spain, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he had the same experience as I did with the claustrophobia of it and the lack. But, you know, by the way, the guy is amazing. He's 91 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. This is the year after he was shot up in a rocket. So I should never be surprised with what he's willing to do.
Yeah. Steve is a huge Trekkie.
Yep.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm casual, but he's all in.
I've watched all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of Discovery? I kind of was hot and cold on, but Strange New Worlds I like a lot.
I love Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
It's by far probably my favorite of everything that's new that's come out.
Yeah. And it was interesting, too, and to talk to Jonathan about, because he's directed a number of the different series. And will be featured prominently in season 3 of Picard.
Yep.
And Picard ran, I liked it. And then I thought spoiler alert, folks, if you haven't watched it, but the end of the first season was weird.
Yep.
And then they never really address it in the second season at all.
Yep.
And so I thought it was an interesting experiment. I hope that they nail the landing with the season three reunion, you know, all the Next Generation cast coming back.
I'm optimistic because season two, episode one, I believe was written and directed by the guy that's doing season three.
Oh, good.
And that was my favorite episode of season two.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Enterprise was a show that it really, I don't think, found itself until season four, by which point it was too late. But you had a real old, the original series fan come in and kind of link the two better than they had in the first three seasons. But, you know.
Yeah,
I think it was the writing was on the wall at that point for that show.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of changing hands as far as I heard at CBS and Paramount. So I think it was done. But I'm glad Trek's back now and various flavors for
Animated and you know, into the future, into the past. I mean, it's a good time.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And one last note on the Masked Singer. I had never seen it before. Like, I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but I've never actually watched it.
Right.
As soon as you opened your mouth, I was like, that's Tom Bergeron. How does nobody know? Like, I didn't need any of the clues. I didn't need the reveal. I'm like, that's Tom Bergeron. Like,
that's funny. You know, a buddy of mine in radio in New Hampshire nailed it right out of the gate, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with if you're used to hearing someone's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just pick it out. Like, I can watch pretty much any animated series that has somebody tied to it from my childhood. And I can, even if it's a newer show, I think my kids were watching at one point, like VeggieTales or something. And I was like, Rob Paulsen. I was able to pick it out. Like, and he played four different characters. And I was like, I got to go look this up on IMDb. And, you know, and sure enough, I was right.
There you go. Got a good ear, Steve.
Yeah, I try.
Yeah, I'll try.
So what was it like working on Star Trek Enterprise?
It was such fun. It really was. It all happened quite by accident. Whoopi was doing the wedding scene in Nemesis, which was their last movie, the Next Generation cast. And we were shooting Hollywood Squares. And so I was going to be in town because I was also doing videos. So I wasn't going to fly back to the East Coast. And she mentioned she was going to be at Paramount shooting the wedding scene for Nemesis. And I said, I'd love to come by and watch. Oh, absolutely. So she got me a drive on. I hung out with the cast. It was wonderful. And it was clear they weren't crazy about that director, you know.
Yep.
Baird, was it Stuart Baird?
Yep.
Yeah, who had sort of a haughty attitude towards the whole thing, which I don't think went down well. But in any case, Rick Berman came by and Whoopi had asked to see the sets of Enterprise. So he came by in his golf cart during the meal break, and his kids had watched me on AFE and he watched Hollywood Squares. So I decided to hop in the golf cart with Whoopi and Rick, and we went over to the Enterprise sets and we're walking. Now, I had been watching Enterprise. Whoopi hadn't seen the series yet. So we were going through engineering and I'm going, oh, yeah, this is where the Suliban come back from the 24th century and they screw with the warp coil. And, you know, just going, I'm fully geeking out. And Rick said, so you watch the show? I said, yeah, no, I like it. It's interesting. It's a prequel. It's a sequel. It's like the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup of Star Trek. And he said, you want to be on it? I went, so he turns to Whoopi and can he act? And she had only seen me ad lib on Hollywood Squares, but God bless her. She said, oh, he's good.
I know. I love that part.
And so he said, all right, you know, we'll be in touch in a few weeks. We'd love to have you be part of an episode. So I thought I'd be like a Klingon waving in the background or something like that. But I went for a wardrobe test, and I was told that my character was in the entire opening scene, which was a lot more than I expected, to be honest. And it turned out to be just a great time. Scott Bakula could not have been more welcoming. everybody was great. I got there. I think my call was something like 5 in the morning or something, and it was 4 hours of makeup. And Rick said, let's keep his, you know, the center of his face recognizable, but go crazy elsewhere. So I had I looked like a sort of a turtle head version of me.
Yep.
If my mother made it a turtle, that's what I would have looked like.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those dream goals, and yeah, that's awesome you were able to do it.
But to have Michael Westmore fussing over you. I mean, good God. I knew Mackenzie, his daughter, but I knew of the Westmore history in Hollywood. I mean, this is the first family of makeup in this town. And to have him applying pieces to me and talk, you know, at that hour of the morning, it was just such a treat.
Absolutely. Awesome.
So switching gears just a little bit, what was your favorite show that you've hosted over all the years that you've done?
It was The Breakfast Time on FX. The about 2 years we did that at the corner of 26th and 5th in the Flatiron District of New York. And it was you can find on YouTube compilation videos that give you a sense of how much freedom we had and how much mayhem we caused in the morning on that show. It was just wonderful. It really was.
Well, it's like, as you said in the book, most morning programs anywhere from 5 to 9 a.m. that aren't radio programs, but on television, it's news. It's giving you the headlines. It's catching you up on what may have happened on the night before or whatever kind of thing. And with Breakfast Time, it was a whole other animal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody said it was like a televised morning zoo radio show. So that there were elements of that, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So what's next for you? And, you know, what's a show that you'd love to host or be a part of?
There, to be completely honest, there is no show that I have any burning desire to host. I hosted things. This is my 50th year as a broadcaster. I started when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now I'm not 17. So honest to gosh, there's no show. I mean, I'm always open to being surprised, you know, because Dancing with the Stars came out of left field and was a wonderful gift for many years. So, you know, I would never say never, but there's no burning desire to host another show, and nor am I in any hurry to at all.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Quiet, guys, please.
I think my favorite, because my buddy Josh and his wife Anissa, they are huge dancing fans. And I had said to him before we were going to do this, I said, if you have any specific dancing questions, let me know beforehand. And everything he was asking is everything that you were talking about in the book. And yeah, for me, it's not that I didn't want to watch the show. It's just I was moving out of, like, for me now, I don't do appointment television. I want it when I want to watch it, and I want it without ads.
Yeah.
I understand why there are ads, but I don't mind paying for an ad-free service. Mm-hmm. And I think the only two times I caught it were Bindi's final performance when she was on.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Super Mario Brothers video. I loved that. That was awesome.
Yeah, Bindi Irwin you're talking about, right? Who won her season with...
Yes,
with
she did.
Her, and she just lovely. The whole family is just a great... I think her brother was... I don't think he's on this season, which they're doing on Disney Plus now, but he was rumored to be doing it. Yeah, she was great. So whenever she and her mom and brother would visit in subsequent seasons, I would pull her out of the audience to like toss to a commercial or welcome us back. And, you know, I would keep saying, you know, you're going to be my hosting Padawan.
So. Nice.
Yeah.
You could have almost done that with the person in the audience at Hollywood, too, because in that April Fool's show, I was trying to get a picture of your face with your finger up, because when you walk off stage and you address the audience, as you're about to walk away, you hear somebody say something to you about it being your fault or something, and you just turn. You have this really stern look. You put your – I didn't do it. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. All said in good fun, but yeah.
Well, yes. No, obvious. Yeah. But like, I was just like, oh my God, his face.
It was really, it was great because I felt like the audience and I and the celebrities stars. And the stars, we had all bonded in this sort of bubble of confusion, you know, like mm-hmm. what the hell is going on here? Okay. And yeah, so but again, the part of me that is the producer part of my head thought we got to just keep going because this is great. This is mm-hmm. good TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that point, I thought they were legitimate assholes.
Wall to wall proctologists.
Yeah, but what they really were, you know, really wonderful actors, completely absolutely. Snowing all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So when's the second book coming? Is well, there a second coming of Tom Bergeron on a book?
You know, it's interesting. I during the early months of the pandemic, I started to write a comic novel called Drive Time about it, which was inspired by my teenage years in radio. Mm-hmm. And I think I got about 70 pages into it. And to be completely honest, I lost interest.
Honestly, if you give that a second look,
yeah,
that could be most usually 24. That could be something like a 5 or 6 or 7 issue. What you already have, that 70 pages,
because yeah.
trades are collected editions are usually 6 issues. It's usually like 100 and something pages. So you probably have enough material where you could essentially release 4 individual comic issues.
Oh, so I just need to get a good illustrator.
Mike knows people.
Oh, Mike, we should talk.
Hey, you give me Shatner's number, I'll give you in touch with Mike.
And now, welcome to bartering for a career.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want a career. I just want to have Steve talk to him.
I got to tell you, he is an absolute hoot, and just amazing, and just a genetic anomaly. I mean, seriously.
Every interview I have ever seen him do, he is so animated and up. He does not look his age. He does not act his age.
No, not at all. Not
He's
at
Captain all. Kirk, man.
Well, yeah. I know. I well, understand it's interesting. That.
He told me when he went up in the I called it the Jeff Bezos penis rocket, but I think it's technically something else. But it does look like a circumcised dick. I mean, come on. But anyway, when they delayed the launch. For some, you know, I think weather reasons. And then, so I was on the Blue Origin website, at our house back east, and my wife was, watching as well. And Liz Shatner was watching in Studio City. So we're watching our friend or husband, you know, get into this capsule at 90 years old, and they stop the countdown with about, like, I don't know, 5 minutes left or less. And Bill told me later that they came over the capsule intercom and said, we don't think this is anything to worry about, but if anybody would like to get out now. I thought, oh, my God. And, of course, he's got to be thinking, I'm Captain Kirk. Do I want to skulk out of a capsule just before it shoots into space? That won't look good. So, yeah, of course, everything went fine. The whole flight is like 17 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're weightless for about 4. And then it went off without a hitch. And it was a great relief to see him come out of the capsule, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we let you go, remind yes. everyone what you have coming up.
You know, the projects I'm working on, well, the New Hampshire Film Festival, for those in the East Coast, I would recommend any year, whether I'm there or not, because you're in coastal New Hampshire. It's the beginning of fall foliage season. The film festival itself has grown by leaps and bounds. It took a bit of a hiccup during pandemic, like everything did. But we'll be screening that web series down the middle. And then we have the project that Bill and I are working on, a film idea with Village Roadshow, which is moving far slower than we would have liked, but it is moving. So no definite date on that, but we've got our people writing a screenplay right now.
Very cool. Very cool. Would you do us the honor of tossing to our commercial break, please, sir?
Absolutely. How would you like me to do that?
Any way you want.
What's the name of the, do you want the name of the podcast?
Just do the traditional, we'll be back after, you know, just make it Tom style.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back after that. Well, you'll be right back, presumably. I've got places to be.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week, we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast from the universe and beyond.
Discover a world of vintage and modern toys that's more than meets the eye with the Triple Takeover Toycast.
Hosted by toy writers and photographers Toy Box Soapbox, 6-0, and TF Square One, this informal and chilled out series of discussions cover everything from vintage Transformers to Mask, Diaclone, Microman, and more, be it nostalgic or current.
Whether you're a seasoned collector or a casual robot enthusiast, all are welcome.
Triple Takeover Toycast.
Oh, hey, I got something!
Since 2009, we have been the premier cartoon podcast here at the GeekCast Radio Network. We are Tooncast, from taking you beyond the cartoons we grew up with to seasonal saucy toon talk, and now we get the origins of toonsters everywhere as we ask guests 30 questions about their cartoon watching experiences, plus so much more. Tooncast is back. Join me, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we give you all the toon talk you will ever need, only on the GCRN. And wherever you consume your podcasts, we are beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination. We are all toons all the time here on Tooncast.
Yeah.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing. Car.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, we are back, and...
Wait, whoa. I'm back, too.
But wait a minute.
I thought he left.
I thought he left.
What? You're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to...
Where's my Uber?
This podcast is not sponsored by Uber.
That was great.
We would like to thank Mr. Bergeron for taking the time to chat
Tom,
with us.
Tom, not Mr. Bergeron, just Tom.
Mr. Bergeron was your father, I assume.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Well, that's usually how I end it all. But anyway, we would like to thank the man who is hosting as fast as he can, or he used to be hosting as fast as he can, Tom Bergeron. This has been an amazing, amazing, amazing time because, like I said at the beginning of this, I grew up watching you and never really had any inspiration to be a podcaster or anything like, I mean, I had inspiration, but I never like figured 13 years later we would be here. Like people asked me when I told a select few friends that we were going to be interviewing you. And I'm just like, as I told them, I'm like, oh yeah. And by the way, Monday, this is all in lower caps. On Monday, I'm going to be interviewing, all caps, Tom Bergeron. And like I said, my buddy Josh and his lovely wife, Vanessa, have watched you throughout the entirety of Dancing with the Stars when you were on it. And he was like, oh my God. He was like, can I listen in? Can I be? I'm like, if it was just me, Josh, if I didn't already have Steve here, because the technology we're using with this is it's worse than two cans and a wire. Sometimes
it can be.
Yes, it can be.
Well, it was a pleasure. I mean, it was a very fast hour, and I enjoyed myself. I'm glad we did this.
Yes, me too. I'm glad you were able to be a part of this with us.
Yes, absolutely. So we will catch you next time here on Altered Geek and Geekcast Radio. I have no idea what's going on, what's coming up next for Altered Geek. That's Steve's thing, Geekcast Radio. The next episode, I hope, will be my buddy Terry Smith from Music Talks Podcast and I talking about a live concert experience that we had over the internet, because that's how things are. That's how I watch things now. I don't do anything. I don't leave my house. I don't have to leave my apartment. I don't. I have everything delivered and everything else like that. Yeah. It just is what it is. So unleash the geek in you, and we will catch you next time.
All right, Steve, Mike, a pleasure.